I just thought to myself, this is what I really enjoy doing. This is what I love doing. And this is what I'm passionate about. And I'm just going to keep doing it. If I really do love what I do and I'm enthusiastic about it. And like I said, doesn't feel like work to me. Why not work very hard to be the best, you know, and be the best in rentals in San Francisco, be the expert in rentals in San Francisco.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Welcome to another episode of the Learn It All podcast. What does it take to be the best of the best? Well, that's what we're going to be talking about today. My guest, David Chesnosky, is the number one residential agent in San Francisco for the past 20 years. So sure, we're going to talk about real estate, but we're also going to talk about what it takes to become the best of the best at anything. So David, or as I've called you for the last 20 years, Ches, how's it going, buddy?
Everything's going great. This is so fun, and it's cool to be on the podcast with you. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and try not to, we'll talk about our relationship, but try not to tell any funny stories about when I was 6 years old wearing my shirt backwards, you know?
Yeah. Okay, we'll leave those out.
So let's just start off with, can you give us a little background, a little background story?
Yeah, sure. So I am a residential leasing broker, like you said, in the Bay Area now. So San Francisco, North Bay, East Bay, Peninsula. And I've been in real estate for 20 years. I grew up on the peninsula in Burlingame, born and raised. And you know, my father's from San Francisco, so spent a lot of time in the city growing up. And I was in a, and my parents are, my dad was, I always like to throw this out there because like being in real estate and, you know, doing what I do now, just meeting people, walking into buildings, showing beautiful apartment buildings or condos for people to rent is, in my opinion, I love it. And it's a pretty easy job. My dad was a plasterer, worked in construction. I used to work with him on the weekends and in summers on construction sites and, you know, mixing plaster and cleaning up job sites and covering things, and did that for years. My mom's a hairdresser, was a hairdresser for like 35 years. So, you know, had was a great place to grow up, and then have lived in San Francisco for a really long time now. And like I said, I've been in residential leasing for 20 years.
Prior to residential leasing, where did you start your career after college?
Yeah, I worked a few different jobs. I mean, I was a really good friend of mine's family owned a computer rental business. So this is in the early to mid 90s, you know, when computers were really expensive. So it was a computer rental business, and I delivered computers and picked up computers from offices all over the Bay Area. My first real sales job, I was selling cell phones, Nextel, Motorola phones, door to door. Mainly peninsula in the South Bay. And then I got into telecommunications, and I was in telecom sales until about 2003. Telecom sales, I mean, this is, I guess, you know, pre 9/11, you would do a lot of door knocking and walking into buildings and knocking on doors and going into businesses, a lot of cold calling over the phone. And then, 2003, I got into real estate in San Francisco.
What led you to make it such a big pivot from telecom to real estate?
I was at the time, I had moved away from San Francisco for a couple of years, and I was working, like I said, in telecom in a different industry. And your family called me because your family had bought a corporate housing building in Nob Hill, 1155 Jones Street.
What was that guy's name again, Chez?
The guy who owned the building?
Yeah, yeah.
Lucian, who ran the building. It was his family, but yeah. Lucian, Jamie. Yeah.
That was fun. Those are good times back in the day.
He's a really good guy. He actually had a really good system down, so he was a great person to train me. My first job, essentially, in real estate. But although we had spent years with your grandfather and your dad going up and walking buildings in the city and, you know, passing out flyers and doing all kinds of stuff, the fun stuff like that. But yeah, it was running a corporate housing building, which you had said that I think this would be a great job for you. And I said, sure, I've never done anything like this before. I'll give it a shot. And it was like running a hotel, which once again, I'd never done before. So moved back to San Francisco, moved into the building. This is kind of late 2003. And I did, and it was a 61 unit apartment building. I worked with Lucian. He kind of trained me for about maybe 3 months or so, or 2-3 months, which is part of the, I think your grandfather had negotiated that as part of the sale, that he had to train the new general manager. And it was a fully furnished corporate apartment building, 30-day minimum stays. And I did everything. I lived in the building. I had an office in the building. And I did the leasing and marketing. I did the accounting. I managed the maids. There was two maids that did, clean the units. There was a maintenance person that I had to manage. And it was a lot of fun. I still remember one of the first couple that I met with. This is when I really felt like this was the right industry for me, and like the right job and right place for me to be. Cause like I said, I was in a totally different industry, and I'm living in San Francisco in this beautiful apartment building right behind Grace Cathedral Church. And one of the first, I think it was the first couple that I rented to, they had come into town. So a lot of the corporate rentals, were over the phone at the time. So people would call in and you'd go through everything over the phone. And then back then, no, it was email, you'd email the contract and they'd email it back, and then they would have it, they'd show up, and then you have to do the move-in. And so I'd meet them, they had their luggage, and I have to give them their keys. And it was, I'll never forget, it was a couple from London moving to San Francisco, and they were just staying in the building for like a month or two until they found like permanent housing, which was a lot of the people that stayed there, whether it was they were renting something, trying to find something to rent long-term, or buying something. So they'd stay there for, a couple months. And I just remember helping them move in and then talking to them, do you know anything about San Francisco? And they're like, no, we're brand new. We just moved here. We just got off the plane. And so I was able to talk to them about the neighborhood and say, oh, go, of course, there's a grocery store that's just a couple blocks away, and you should check out this restaurant. You should check out this bar. I mean, it's Nob Hill. It's like, yeah, this is early 2000s, right? So you should go to the Top of the Mark. You should go to the Big Four at the Huntington. You should go to the Tonga Room at the Fairmont. You should go to the, and I just remember they were just so happy and like smiling and like so excited and like to be there. And it just felt good to help them and kind of, with their transition into San Francisco. And I knew at that point that I was in the right business, in the right industry. And then 20 years later, I'm still doing, a lot of residential leasing, helping people move into homes and, transition and move new into San Francisco, or even just moving around in San Francisco.
So that was what I was going to get to is, so you're a residential multifamily real estate agent. And what I said at the beginning of the show is true. I mean, you are literally the number one in one of the most competitive markets, which is San Francisco, over the past 20 years, and arguably maybe even of all time in San Francisco. So there's more to it than just renting apartments to individuals. Tell me about what excites you about what you do, and what do you think are the traits that it takes, whether it's in your industry or anything else, to really get to being the best of the best, like you have been able to become?
Yeah. So that was nice of you to say. I've won a couple of awards. I won the San Francisco Apartment Association has a leasing agent of the year. I think I won that in 2014. But
was that the last time? 2014? Maybe. They discontinued the award.
There's no ladder of, this person is the number one with leasing. So, But once again, I'm known as someone that knows the rental market really well. Let's just say that, and has been done it for a long time, and has rented literally tens of thousands of units. So apartments, condos, and homes. What was I gonna say? I started in running furnished housing. So I went from like general manager to running furnished housing for the largest residential landlord in San Francisco. Then I was doing, because I'm an agent, I was just doing rentals on my own. And then I met another person who ended up buying, hundreds of apartment buildings in 2011, 2012, 2013. And I ran the leasing team for that residential landlord, who was the largest residential landlord in San Francisco also. So that's how I've been involved in so many leases. I mean, we were renting 175 to 200 apartments a month. And then in 2019, I went out on my own. And so for the past 5 years, I've been, out on my own, renting, once again, apartments, condos, homes. So to answer your question, it was, I just, once again, I really love what I do. It's not work to me. I think I work a lot. The rental business, you have to work a lot. It's constant. There's always calls and emails coming in, and you have to meet people and show apartments. And so a lot of work after work hours and during the work hour, after work hours, and then on the weekends too. But I would just say, I just really, really like what I do. And I think I'm passionate about it. And I think one of the main things is I'm enthusiastic about it. I love San Francisco also, and I love San Francisco real estate too. Like I said, like back in the day, going to buildings with your dad and your grandfather when we were kids, like I love that. And I was always, and then just moving to the city after college and going to friends' apartments and going into their buildings and their apartments and see where it's like, I don't know, it just always really interests me. I just always something that I thought was really cool. And I love looking at all the architecture and all the buildings. A lot of the apartment buildings, as you know, like older buildings are so unique. So there's always these different characteristics to the buildings or the units. And so I've just always been, and I like meeting people. You get a lot of people, maybe not as many now, but over the past 20 years, lot of new people moving to San Francisco, right? So you're meeting people from like all over the world. So I like meeting people, hearing where they're from, hearing their stories, helping them. And then just an overall enthusiasm for what I do, I think has really helped me, always optimistic too. So like you could walk into a building and someone might think, This building is it's ugly, but you got to think of you can always think of negative things about a building, but the best thing is you think of the potential of it or thing. And that's how I've helped owners too. And that's how I help owners now. It's like if there are certain things that they can change to make it better, which usually there is, and you can always find ways to make something that's not so great, great, but lucky to be in San Francisco because there's so many great neighborhoods and, there's not a lot of, and we'll talk more about that probably. I mean, there's not a lot of neighborhoods that are not desirable or not in good shape. Downtown right now is not in good shape. All the other neighborhoods are pretty much back to normal and they're the same. So
yeah, we'll get to San Francisco in a minute. So what I'm hearing, especially for our listeners out there, is the importance of being passionate about what you do. One thing I know about you is you outwork everybody. You always work super hard. You're always willing to listen and learn. But you told me a good story prior to coming on in our show today was about, which I think is really critical. It's about finding your niche. I think a lot of people are afraid to take the courage to really get narrow in and focus on your niche, because it can be scary. A lot of people like to throw a big net out there and try and do a bunch of different things. But can you share that story about what you first thought about doing these massive buildings, and then how you said, why not just be the very best at this, and how you did that? I think that can really benefit our listeners out there about finding a niche.
Yeah, well, like I said, growing up, you know, being close to apartment buildings in the city, and know, you know, and walking them with your dad, your grandfather, and even my dad, being a construction, he would get jobs in these old apartment buildings because a lot of them were stucco. They had stucco exteriors or stucco interiors, which he was a specialist at. So we'd go into these beautiful buildings, and my thought or plan, I think at the time, was I'm going to get my license and I'm going to sell multi-million dollar apartment buildings. You know? So these apartment, you know, I'm going to sell buildings that are $20 million and I'm going to make, you know, tons of, you know, these huge commissions, and I'm going to, you know, and I'm going to rule the city, and because I'm going to be the top guy, I don't know, you know, those like visions of grandeur. And then I get in and I start doing leasing, which leasing has changed in San Francisco. I don't know. Personally, the way that I saw it when I first started was with a lot of realtors, which, you know, I'm friends with so many realtors and brokers and everything now that refer me a lot of business. So I'm not saying this in a bad, but a lot of times realtors kind of like, yeah, I don't want to do leasing. Like, let's just give it to somebody else. Let's give it to Dave or give it to somebody else. I don't do that. I just do sales. And of course I was business coming my way. I mean, that's how I grow my business. That's how I still grow my business. That's how I have so many clients now. And so sure, I'll do it. And once I started really seeing how much I liked rentals and liked helping people, and I was doing a ton of rentals, I just thought to myself, you know, maybe this is what I really enjoy doing. This is what I love doing. And this is what I'm passionate about. And I'm just going to keep doing it. And then I thought, I'm like, you know, maybe I will sell. And I have. I've sold apartment buildings, and I've sold. I've helped people buy apartment buildings and help people buy condos. But I just thought, you know, if I really do love what I do, and I'm enthusiastic about it, and like I said, doesn't feel like work to me. This is just me. Why not work? Why not work very hard to be the best, you know, and be the best in rentals in San Francisco, be the expert in rentals in San Francisco. And be the go-to guy that people, when they want to know what's an apartment worth or a condo worth or a home worth, they're calling and emailing me. And after through the years, that's what's happened. So I would obviously tour as many properties as I could. When I was working for these owners that had all these buildings, I'd walk through as many units as possible. And then at night I'd be on Craigslist, because this is years ago. I remember Zillow had, maybe it was just starting. I don't know how long Zillow's been around, 10 years, but even before that. So it was just Craigslist. So I'm on Craigslist and I'm looking at what else is on the market. What are people asking for rents? And I still do that. And just, you know, just constantly trying to make sure that I'm educated and I know the market. What are people asking? What are things renting for? And just diving in that way, like I said, just always, I always have that knowledge. And now it's funny. I was telling you, like, now I mean, I think if you were to ask a lot of the commercial brokers that sell apartment buildings, you know, who knows, who can we call that knows the rental market? I mean, I just got a call recently from somebody, you know, like somebody new to the market said, we need help with pricing. Who do we call? And they said, you got to call Dave. And I'm talking to him already now. So, that is, yeah, that's kind of what I've become is like this rental broker that knows the market really well. Even, you know, somebody that's selling those multi-million dollar buildings now will call me for advice on what are these apartments worth? What do you think these can rent for? I might not be the one selling it, but I'm helping them and I'm involved in the transaction. So I've been involved in, yeah, once again, hundreds of those, because when I worked for these big investment group, the last big investment group, I mean, they had bought like 300 buildings over about a 6 or 7 year period. So I had to walk all those buildings and go through all the units and say, like, this is what they're worth. This is what I think they can be worth if we make some, you know, some changes within the unit or even within the building. And yeah, and I love it. And I've done it for a long time. And you know, I'm going to keep doing it, and I'm growing my team even more now, and we're expanding more now into other markets. So it's great.
So I think essentially what I'm hearing is you've really gone all in, right? You've gone all in and you become the thought leader, for San Francisco and maybe even stretch it out towards the North Bay. Did it take discipline to not get distracted? And what, do you ever have examples of somebody say, hey, can you take on some listing in Seattle, and you turn that down to stay focused, or anything like that?
Yeah. No, only, you know, not anything really outside of the Bay Area yet. My plan is, I take that back. Not Seattle. I had an offer to build a team in LA. This is maybe going back, it was kind of early COVID, I think, or maybe it was like right before COVID. And I decided I wasn't ready for it yet. I wanted to expand more in the Bay Area before I went down to LA. So that took some discipline to like say, you know, at the time, and I thought about it. I'm like, why? Well, I should, like, this is what I want to do. I want to grow the business, but I don't know. I just felt at the time I was really only in San Francisco. So I said, no, I think it's better. And, which is, it's happening, you know, now and happened, where it'd be better to really be more, expand more in the Bay Area and then go to another market. So I'm pretty close. I mean, I would think by next year, I'll be in another, whether it's LA is probably the most logical move next. But, you know, I think it also, I know enough people now where it could be, and I've got a good system down where it could be Seattle or Denver or Phoenix or LA. I guess it just depends on where the opportunity comes. And that's pretty much that. So I guess that took some discipline, but I've also thought to myself, like, maybe it's time for me to, you know, I've done a lot of leasing and, you know, and it's great. I love it. Maybe it's time for me to like move over to sales full time and now I can go, because I've got all this more experience knowing the market really well, because I've been in and out of so many buildings and apartments that I can go sell apartment buildings now. But I'm going to stay in, because like I said, I still do a little bit of sales, just as long as it, you know, I can take the work on, it doesn't affect my leasing business, but I have enough people on my team now helping me that I can. So I do, you know, I do a little bit of sales now, and then I do a lot of leasing still. So,
yeah, it kind of reminds me of a little bit of with your focuses and your passion. There's a great book called Good to Great, I think it's called, by Jim Collins, where he talks about the hedgehog. And on the hedgehog concept is you look at three things. You look at, what are you passionate about? What can you make money at, and what can you be the best at the world at? And I think that that's important sometimes for people to think about that, right? Because you bounce around with different careers, which I think is great. You know, you get all these different experiences, and sometimes, I mean, do you have any advice for our listeners out there? Because sometimes you can be really passionate about something, but you can't make a living off of it. So what do you do in that situation?
So you're repeat that one more time.
So say for instance, like, luckily for you, you're really passionate about residential real estate in San Francisco. Fantastic.
Right.
And you can make a great living off that. Well, some people are really passionate about they want to be the next Axl Rose, but they have a terrible voice, right? So I think it's important for people to understand. And I don't know if you had any advice for him, and maybe sampling different things, but you got to have enough self-awareness to realize that even if you're passionate about some things, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to align with your ability to make a living on it.
Right. Yeah. So let's see, what would be, the first thing that pops in my head is when I worked for a big investment group for a company, I had base salary and I had a bonus plan and I had medical benefits and everything. And then all of a sudden I left to go out on my own and I didn't have any of that. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I had to make money. And so, and I don't know if this really answers your question, but it might. I was when I moved to a brokerage, and I was working under a brokerage, and I started just pretty much calling, you know, like anyone that I knew in the real estate and brokerage community, and just basically said, you know, hey, I've done leasing for years. And once again, that was my plan was to do more sales, but I wanted to make money right away. I mean, you know, and I had
to make money.
I had a little stress, right. Like I had to. I have to pay my bills, and so I started reaching out. And anytime, I don't know if this is the best advice for some, but at least for rent, for work, and what I was doing, and anytime somebody said, "Do you want to work on this, or can you get, you know, do you want to do a short term furnished rental?" Yes. Do you want to rent this apartment out in the Tenderloin? Yes. Do you want to rent this condo out in the East Bay? Yes. I just pretty much, because I, you know, like I said, I didn't have a large client base yet at the time. And so I knew I had to build that up. So it worked out because I just got busy really fast. And so by getting busy and creating all this activity, then I started getting, you know, hey, you did such a great job with this little 1-2 month rental that I didn't make that much money on, but then that person referred me over to another person, and then that person referred me to another person. And I've never just seen, I've never done any advertising. You know, I just, my business is strictly referrals.
I think that's amazing. And I hear what you're saying, that sometimes you may have to take on a job or an assignment or a project that maybe is you're not super passionate about, but you got to do what you need to do to pay the bills. And I think for our listeners out there who are in sales, I think one of the things that Chez said here is key is activity, especially when you're first just getting started in sales. Take on what you can. You know, they're all learning experiences, right? You know, you learn, you can do things differently. And then once you build up a book of business and kind of like Dave has here is a flywheel of referrals from people, then you can kind of narrow in and qualify leads that you have, right?
Yeah, exactly. I ran leasing teams and managed, you know, multiple agents and administrative staff and some marketing people, and so I would train all the new agents and at my company. So what I told them, and I think this is kind of, yeah, similar to what you said, is, you know, I just kind of went out and just got out there and just started talking to people. Like, am I going to get stuck on certain things or maybe not know what to do in certain situations? But yeah, absolutely. So when that happens,
I think that's important. When you get stuck on something certain, I mean, and I like what you said earlier, it's like Frank Lemby saying, knock on doors, get out there. But a lot of people are afraid to stick their neck out there. So if you get stuck on certain something that maybe you're not familiar with, how do you just bulldoze your way through it to overcome that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just, for me, so I'm not unlike yourself, I'll just tell you, I am not a big book reader at all. I learn better by connecting with other people and asking questions to other people. So creating relationships with mentors, with people that are successful. And, you know, and so when I was at this other investment group, you know, the CEO, the president of the company, the COO, the CFO, were all very smart people. And, you know, also in the CEO and the CIO, were really good salespeople too. And so I tried to just connect with them as much as I could. Now they're super busy people, but you know, if there was a time when I'd go to their assistants, hey, do they have a time to grab lunch next week on Tuesday? Yeah, they're available this day. Great. Can you ask them can we grab some lunch together? And so that was a big one, you know, and you know, or a cup of coffee with them, like, or pop by their office and check in with them and talk to them. And so being, you know, and then once again, then you have those relationships with people and even other brokers and other agents, other owners that own a lot of buildings. I have one of my favorite clients. I love all my clients, but one of my favorite clients is a guy that has owned real estate in San Francisco for 40 years. He owns 15 apartment buildings, beautiful trophy apartment buildings. And I call him, we have lunch once a month or once every couple months at Kakari. It's his favorite restaurant in the city. And I'll if I get in a situation where I'm not really sure about it, or maybe if I'm a little stressed about it, I call him and I ask him, like, "Hey, Tony, I got a situation here. Here's what's going on. What do you think?" And he's so nice that he takes the time. He's like, "Don't worry about it. You're fine. Or do this, or call that." To me, watching videos or listening and then talking to people, I learn better that way than reading books. That's just, I'll be honest, that's just how. So that's, yeah. I mean, that's a way that, you know, and it's, once again, people, you just ask someone, same thing. Almost always, you know, and especially people that are really successful and smart people, they want to help others. That's what I've found. You know, they want to help others. They like mentoring people. It means a lot to them. So it's very rare. And by the way, before I forget, I follow this guy on Instagram. His name's, and I don't think I told you yet. He's called the 1 Minute Mentor. I think it's Peter Thomas. Guy's awesome. He gives it these little
1 minute in show notes.
Peter Thomas. Yeah, I'll put it in the notes for you. Peter Thomas, 1 Minute Mentor. He's 85 years old. He's owned, you know, business. I think he's from Canada, but anyways, the guy's awesome. And I follow him. I see his videos. I try not to spend too much time on social media, but he's got these little blurbs about, like, if you get in a situation, and I know that he's talked about this. And so that's been a big one for me. It's just like being able to connect with people and have relationships with people. And so when you get stuck or you get in a situation, you're not really sure, or you're a little stressed out about it, I call somebody. You know, say, "Hey, kid, do you have just a few minutes? Can I bounce this off you?" And then when people, and I've had people that do that with me. And of course, I mean, if they trust me enough to hear my opinion or how I can help, of course, then I try and always be able to, you know, try to give back to them or try and help them as much as I can.
I think it's great. And it's clear that mentors and coaches have played such an important role in your personal growth and development. And I feel the same way. And it's true. Successful people, they really like helping individuals, right? And sharing their wisdom. But I think it also has to be a two-way street. You know, in order for them to continue, you got to reciprocate a little bit. So is there anything special that you do? So if somebody gives you good advice, do you send them a note or a thank you or follow up and let them know what resulted from their advice?
Yeah, usually, you know, it's not, I mean, I guess it just depends. I'll tell you, I work, you know, it's in San Francisco, being a leasing broker. I'm overly cautious and maybe even paranoid about making sure that I'm following the rules. You know, I don't want to, I'm not gonna, of course, I mean, I wouldn't do this. I don't want to make a mistake and violate fair housing or say the wrong thing to somebody or something. So I have, you know, a couple really good trusted friends who are attorneys, you know, in San Francisco that I can bounce ideas off of. I mean, for them at the end of the year, I go to their office and I try and see them in person and shake their hand and say thank you. And I give them a bottle of wine. For the other ones, if it's, you know, Tony, I, of course, yeah. After, you know, I'll send him a text or I'll give him a call. "Hey, thanks a lot. Hey, here's how that ended up." Or, you know, "Thank you so much for your help." That's usually all that they, you know, that they're looking for. But yeah, I guess it just depends on who your mentor is or your trusted advisor or somebody that you're going to, but I do it at the end of the year. And I know that the attorneys that I work with, you know, it's not a ton of money, but when those invoices come in, I pay them immediately. I want them to know, like, I appreciate. And you know what? I've gotten in some situation before where I'm a little stressed out and it's a Saturday night at 10 o'clock and I'm not kidding, I'll send them an email and they respond back, like, really quick, sometimes within 5 minutes.
I think it has to do with, you know, you come across, obviously I've known you for my whole life, you're a very authentic, positive person, and people connect with individuals like that, and I think it goes a long way. And whether it's somebody's a vendor, a partner, or a client, if you kind of treat everybody the way you want to be treated, or you do it with integrity, like you said, people respond to that, and I think it's really important. Let's pivot over to, tell me a little bit about San Francisco. Now, as you know, I've born and raised in the Bay Area. Your dad, Andy, was like my dad's best friend. They were absolutely the best. Then you and I lived in the city for, 23, 25 years, had some unbelievable times together, whether it's the Tonga Room or a couple of bars down in the marina. We've been to all of them. But now I'm kind of moved out. And whenever I go anywhere and somebody asks where I'm from, they always say, oh, San Francisco, man, it looks terrible on the news. I personally don't think it's as bad as people are saying. What, as of right now, with, you know, in the middle of 2024, give me a lowdown on San Francisco.
Yeah. So yeah, and of course, I get this question a lot. Also, obviously, because I'm renting a housing in San Francisco. So the Tenderloin and certain parts of downtown are not in good shape. Getting better slowly, but not in good shape. You know, they still have a pretty bad drug problem there. That's really the main that's the main thing, which they are slowly figuring out. But and I think with a better mayor and better supervisors, although the mayor is really I personally voted for the last election. There's a couple new people that are coming, you know,
that
are
subscribes to our YouTube channel. So hopefully she doesn't watch this episode. Just kidding.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I was just going to say,
I'm kidding.
It's all good. No, I was just going to say I think that a lot of the things that she's done probably recent in the past 6 months or a year has been, are really good things. Like it's helping because it's getting better and there's a new district attorney. And I think with some supervisor changes, I think it'll continue to get better and much better next year. But other than, like I said, certain parts of downtown and the Tenderloin, San Francisco is very much the same. It's back to normal.
Is AI going to be the big boom that everybody's talking about? Everybody's going to a bunch of AI companies that's moving in. Is that going to impact both the commercial and the residential space?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it seems like it, you know, everybody's got their opinions. I mean, I meet a lot of people. I see people's applications. I see what industry they're working in or where they're working in. Do we rent to a lot of people that are working for AI companies? Yes. So does that mean that those companies are setting up shop here and expanding and hiring people? Yes. Is it going to fill up? Is downtown going to fill up with AI companies in the next year or 2 years? I don't think so. I don't think it's going to happen that quick. Over the next like 5 to 10 years, from what I hear, yeah, I think so. But so I think that financial district, you know, what they're going to do with downtown or the financial district is going to take some time. But yeah, I've got some, you know, I've rented a couple apartments to a group that has a hacker house in Alamo Square, and they put their 3-month programs, and they have all these new AI, all AI based startups that come into town. They're here for a few months. And then after that, then they help them raise money. And you know that, and after that, then a week and a half later, a new round of AI companies comes in, and it's a 3-month program. And they invest in those companies. And you know, that's, I mean, when you think back on it, well, I guess you can go back to like the dot-com days. That's kind of how it was in the dot-com days, right? All these little startups coming in, and then they started raising money, and then they started growing, and they started hiring people. Might be a little different now, you know, because of the whole work from home. So because like not ever, that was different back then. There was zero office space, right? Everybody, like all the office space was leased. They couldn't find office space. And then that affected the housing market also. Now, you probably, you know, right? Some people that they're hiring might be able to still work from wherever, anywhere. And so they might not have as many people coming here, but it's definitely going to change things. It's going to help the I'm sure the office market and the housing market in the city. There's still a lack of housing in San Francisco. So that's the one thing that I'm trying to, whenever I talk to anyone, I'm trying to explain to them that, you know, creating more rules and restrictions or tougher rent control on housing in San Francisco is not the answer. That is, I've done this for 20 years. I've seen how rent prices have gone up so much, just a lack of supply and a high demand has done. Putting more rental restrictions on housing in San Francisco is going to make it even worse. It's going to make the prices go up even more. That's my opinion. What they need to do is build more housing, which they're trying to do. They're starting to do. But they have to do more of it. And it's all types of housing, not just high-end luxury condos. Of course, that's not the answer. Affordable housing, market rate housing, they've got to do both. And they need to build a lot of it, especially affordable housing. And which I know they've got projects, you know, going right now, but they need to do more. So
it's still a great city. It makes me think back on a lot of things. Let's see, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you have one great Walt Lemby story? The founder of Learn It.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite stories was, I have a lot, but when I was new in real estate and I'm running that corporate housing building, for, you know, your dad and your grandfather, and it was a 61 unit building, and it was really their first like a entire building that was just furnished rentals, corporate housing. So I remember I'd be in the office in the morning and your dad would call from his car phone when he's driving up to the city from Burlingame, and he always wanted an update on leasing. You know, he didn't really care about, you know, of course, he is, you know, how many units have maintenance repairs, or, you know, how many units we have to clean. I mean, you know, he wants to know.
Sales.
Yeah, how many units are filled, and you know, what's our occupancy? It was always really focused on occupancy, and the rates. But it's like, if he called me and I said, I have, let's say, 10 vacant units or whatever, 8 vacant and 2 coming up, he'd basically say, your prices are too high, lower the prices and fill the units. I'd say, okay, great. So I'd lower the prices, we fill the units, you know, and then let's say he called the following.
And he's pissed. Why are you so cheap?
Yeah, and then he'd say, what how many vacants we have? I'd say, we have 1 vacant, we're full. He's like, oh, you're giving it away, it's too low. You gotta raise the prices a little bit and get a little higher rent. So it was, yeah. It was always that whether it was too high or too low, but it was a lot of fun, and it was like I said, it was a beautiful building, and we ended up growing from there. That was the first building, and then at we grew to like 750 furnished apartments in San Francisco, which for San Francisco is a lot for one company.
You did a lot of great work for my family. They're all grateful for it. I mean, we don't have time to talk about your first managerial position was actually when you worked at Learn It and you managed the flyer team at Learn It.
Yeah, yeah. I know that was in the mid-90s.
Mid-90s. And, you know, I mean, June 4th is Learn It's 29th anniversary. It's amazing how long we've been around. Before we go, one question we ask everybody, and this is going to be a tough one for you to get past me, is what is one thing about you that not a lot of people know? Like, what is one thing that people don't know about Dave Chesnosky that it's kind of interesting?
One thing that people don't know about me. Yeah, I don't know. That is a hard question. Cause I do like to talk a lot, I open myself up, I think, to people going, what is one thing? God, that is really hard. I don't know if you know this. You know what this might not surprise you, like you said, if I was
nothing surprises me anymore, but okay, go ahead.
If I was not a leasing broker and, like I said, in real estate, I've always thought about it. I'd love to be a basketball coach, whether it's high school, college, I don't know, might be a little stressful, you know, I'm pretty fascinated with basketball, whether it's college or pro coaches. I think they're the way that they, especially in college now too, with like, I ran into Frankie Ferrari the other day. He used to play at USF. He's an assistant at USF now. And, you know, it's, Yeah, I mean, being with the transfer portal and all these things, I think it's even more challenging for these coaches now to really, you know, get a team and keep it together. And then there's just, you know, and then obviously there's a lot of pressure to win games. And, you know, even, and like, look at me, like pro coaches, like those guys, what's the guy from the Cleveland Cavaliers, guy made the playoffs the past two seasons and they fired him because he didn't want to change. So like the pressure that these guys are in, and then they're like to coach the team and deal with. So, and then whether it like as a college or pro, and then to me, it's fascinating. I just think those guys are really sharp people. They're so sharp in those jobs. And then to lose a game and then have to go sit down in front of the media and answer questions, like after losing a game and staying positive and making sure you're not saying anything that like, you know, offends people or pisses people off. It's like, I don't know. I've always thought to myself that one day, and I tell my wife this, that we have a plan. Maybe this is another thing that people don't know. I mean, my wife is originally from Colombia. We would love, our favorite country to travel to is Spain. We've talked about retiring in Spain. And so I think my retirement goals are retire in Spain and coach basketball, whether it's younger kids or high school kids. And that's it.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. And I hope if Lucy's into it, you got to help her. Otherwise, Walter Lemby Jr., who's almost three, we got to get him out there shooting hoops.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, so we've talked about a lot today. Let's see if I can remember. We talked about San Francisco. We talked about going all in, connecting with people, outworking people, and so many great things. Where can people who want to connect with you at, Jez?
I'll give it. You can go to my website, which is www.rentingsf.co, not .com. So renting, rentingsf.co. Or you can send me an email, which is my first name, Dave, at rentingsf.co. Or follow me on TikTok, rentingsf, or follow me on Instagram. It's rentingsfinc, rentingsf, Inc. Any of those, and happy to, you know, and yeah, and just reach out anytime. I have a pretty good sized team now, so I might not be able to respond right away if you're, you know, messing, but eventually I will.
Yeah, now you're doing a lot of, I love all your reels that you put out there. I think you put out a lot of good content. All right, everyone, we're at time. Chez, thank you for having you. Thank you for being here today. You were awesome. And to our listeners out there, if you enjoyed this episode today, please like it, subscribe, tell a friend or two. And until next time, stay curious and keep learning. Have a great day, everyone. See ya.